Welcome to Perfusion Rock Stars. It is November 4th. This is episode 11, and we are here with Perfusion Life and Perfusion Rock Star founder, Adam Clark. Thank you for joining us, Adam. How are you today?
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Doing well.
Great. So a little overview over Adam. He graduated the Johns Hopkins School of Perfusion in December of 1991, where he then went to start his career at the University of Maryland Medical Center, where he worked until 1993, then returning back to Johns Hopkins Hospital in 1993, where he became the chief in 1996 to 2000. After the year 2000, interested in some personal growth, he obtained his MBA from Loyola College. And then from there, combined his clinical experience with his business education and went to work for Cobe, then Soren Group, now LivaNova, up until 2016, where he grew his territory over 200% and won many various achievements and awards. In 2016, he decided to get recertified and became a locum perfusionist while also joining up with C3 Solutions, a perfusion staffing company. Did that for a couple years, about a year, and then decided to branch out on his own and started Perfusion Life in September of 2017. We'll probably talk a little more about you getting recertified in the future. That's just a little overview of Adam. Sam, do you want to start off with the first question?
Thanks, Todd. Seeing as you got your start in perfusion, what was the moment or what made you decide that you wanted to become a perfusionist?
My first job, I had a bachelor's degree in biology, wasn't sure where I wanted to work, what I wanted to do. My fiance and I moved to Baltimore. I went to Johns Hopkins Hospital. Back then, jobs were in binders, so I looked through this big binder. And I found a position as a critical care technician with my BS in biology. I was qualified. So I started working in the operating room, and that's where I was introduced to cardiac surgery, perfusion. And then shortly after that, the perfusionist there decided to open a perfusion school. So I ended up being in the first class there in 1990. So I was there for 3 years working, and then it was just sort of a natural progression within the Johns Hopkins Hospital system. So I always would look at the perfusionists. It looked like it was very easy what they were doing. But once you're in the hot seat, you realize it's not that easy. They were just good at what they were doing and they made it look easy. But it was just a great opportunity to start a career. I felt like it was less of a job and more of a career in perfusion. I wasn't sure I was going to get in because I had some pretty poor undergraduate grades, but they knew me and that helped, and I had, I guess, decent work ethic, and they thought I would make a decent perfusionist. So that was the process, and became a perfusionist, went to school.
I'm glad the reason you got to become a perfusionist is because you thought this will be easy. I'm glad that's that was your driving force. It's very good.
Well, it looked like a very respectful position, and again, it just looked cool because they were sitting there like controlling the patient's heart and lungs, the function of the heart and lungs during that time. And I don't know, the people that were there, there was a relatively small group back then at Johns Hopkins Hospital, maybe 6 perfusionists. And they were sort of influential in me making that career decision.
All right. So this is sort of a follow-up question. I think it could have been a part of part one. What was it like re-entering the field after 16 years of not being a CCP?
It was challenging, but doable. I would encourage others that have been out of the profession for a while and want to get back into perfusion that it is possible. I had been in the operating room selling heart-lung machines and perfusion products for 16, 17 years, but it was extremely different going back. Being a perfusionist, very challenging to get back into the sort of the hot seat, if you will. of pumping cases as a perfusionist. You know, when you're younger and you can adapt a little easier, a little quicker, a little faster, and then you get older and you have to wear readers. And, you know, I first went into perfusion, I was 26. And then the next time I went in, I was 50 plus or minus, so 52. A little more challenging as you get older. But if you spend your time studying, you can pass your boards. And fortunately, I had some wonderful people at UNC Hospital in Chapel Hill that supported me, Greg Griffin, the perfusion team there, my sort of clinical instructors, part two. And it was very challenging but rewarding to do it again.
Well, seeing as you started as a perfusionist, in your 20s, and then you went back in your 50s, was there someone that influenced you to not only start, but maybe even to get back into perfusion throughout your whole career?
So initially, I didn't mention, but Steve Thompson at Johns Hopkins Hospital, he's now an administrator, I believe, still in some large health systems. But he was the chief perfusionist at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And he was the one that really was influential in sort of helping me. He and Dennis Rivard, Candace Bancherry, and Bob Baldwin, and Michael. I mean, it was a whole team of perfusionists there that just sort of accepted me back then and made me want to be a perfusionist. But primarily Steve Thompson really helped me there, and then helped me a little later as to be sort of as my path when I was becoming a chief perfusionist and getting my MBA. And he was one of my references. So he did a lot for me professionally, and was certainly a mentor then. Do you have other questions about other mentors in my life or people like that? Because I do have some others that I'd like to touch on.
The correct answer is mom. But
okay. Well, so that's what I'm saying. I mean, I didn't know because...
Well, in your professional, you know, your personal could have led into your desire to into it.
Fortunately, I've always had the support of mom and the family, right? Dawn and you guys and that and my parents. My mother and father, and that made it very, not easy, but certainly opened the door for me to continue to go back into perfusion, leave jobs, good paying jobs, and start new careers. So all those people helped me. Joe Mace was also very influential in my professional development. When I was in perfusion, to chief perfusionist, was getting my MBA, considering hospital administration, things didn't quite work out as I had anticipated, ended up falling into sales, and that opportunity was there because of Joe Mace, and he's always been a big part of my life and my career path. So another individual that I need to send a shout out to.
Fantastic. Something I forgot to mention, it was my first intro. Normally, obviously, Adam does this. This is Sam Clark, my brother, and Adam's other son. He's typically behind the camera, and now we put him in the hot seat, as Adam would say.
Because no one else was available.
So, yeah, so I just wanted to mention that. I was thinking about that, and then you mentioned family, and Sam is a part of the family, and he's a part of the Perfusion Life team.
Hopefully, when the bar came up and it all said Clark.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you got the little gist of that.
So thank you for telling us about people that influenced you. So big question, what does being a perfusionist mean to you?
Well, again, it's sort of an opportunity when I initially went into perfusion where I felt like I had a job, I was doing certain things, and perfusion really allows you to have a career. I think the pay will attract a lot of people initially, but also the responsibility. Being part of a team at Johns Hopkins Hospital in the 90s, there was great respect between the surgical team, the surgeons, the perfusionists, the anesthesia team, the nursing team. we all worked very well together, and I just felt like there was great respect in my home, including the PAs, physician's assistants. It was just a great family and a great team. That's what I recall. So it was, and I mean, the responsibility of sort of taking over for someone's heart and lungs while their heart or lungs and lungs are being operated on is a major responsibility and can be extremely stressful, but also very rewarding.
So. Fantastic. Thank you for that.
So there's a reason you probably wanted to, you know, do this whole interview. You've seen it. You've hosted this show. You want the cheaply edited superhero mask on your face. So with that being said, what is your perfusion superpower?
Oh, gosh. I felt like when I'm in the operating room, this has been said before, but I think if you're extremely particular about things, which can annoy your family, that will tend to help you be a good perfusionist.
Yeah.
Because things have to be in order, things have to be a certain way, so that when it hits the fan, you're kind of prepared and ready to handle things, because you're always going to have emergencies, always things are going to pop up. So I would say that's probably what makes, you know, sort of my superpower, if you will. I also think it's extremely important to be able to get along with others, and I typically have been able to do that. There's a lot of communication in the operating room, and without effective communication, you're not going to have a good day. So,
anyway, that's fair.
A couple of thoughts.
Great. So tell us about a time where things went south in the OR and your, I guess, tightness helped save the situation.
Well, so I think of a couple things that happened that weren't necessarily my fault, but I'm going to share this, and maybe I shouldn't, but it was kind of my fault that the problem happened. But in perfusion, perfusion is on bypass. Some cases, pull the patient down and circulatory arrest, so hypothermic circulatory arrest. So this one particular case, in the operating room, a pediatric patient, and the perfusionist cooled the patient down, turned the pump off, called me, hey, can you give me a bathroom break? I got to run to the bathroom, I'll be right back. Sure. So heart lung machine's turned off, the patient's laying there, no circulation, surgeon's operating very quickly, trying to get through the circulatory arrest period. And right before he leaves, he says, hey, Adam, while I'm going to the bathroom, can you please take this particular piece of tubing, this vent or sucker that we're not using anymore, attach it to this cardiotomy reservoir and just, you know, drain it. So I said, okay. So I make the attachment, crank it up. What I don't troubleshoot on my own is that was the last port that was available on the cardiotomy reservoir. And so what it did is it sent pressure and air down into the venous reservoir bag. And all of a sudden I heard a hiss and blood was spraying out of his bag all over the floor while we were arrested, and the perfusionist is in the bathroom thinking that I'm just sort of standing there while he's taking care of things. So he comes back like WTF with blood spraying all over the place. I'm scrambling. We were not a venous reservoir bag account. So it was an unusual procedure with a particular circuit and blood circuit. And I don't know how many extra components and circuits we had, but we were scrambling. Fortunately, we did get it fixed prior to the surgeon saying, okay, let's go back on bypass. But, you know, you only have a limited time when you're arrested like that, and there's no circulation going to the baby. And it was stressful. We ended up getting it fixed. But, whew, that was not a good day.
Sounds like it.
It sounds wonderful, yeah. So starting in your 20s as a perfusionist, and you're now in your 50s and you own a perfusion company, where do you, from that perspective, see perfusion heading as a whole?
I think there's continuing development in technology. Things continue to change. There's change in procedures demand. I think it was a period where the expectation was that perfusion may go away because other advancements in the profession may replace the individual perfusionist. Now there seems to be a growing demand, but I still think there's a risk where technology could replace, you know, maybe some preventive therapies and things like that, prevent cardiac surgery in general, and do more things less invasively in the cath lab, medicines, things like that, looking at 10, 20, 30 years or more. But I think in the immediate perfusion position, there seems to be lots of interruption in the profession right now. It seems like nurses have had travelers for a long time. Perfusion seems to be sort of introducing travelers more to the profession and to the market. There's been disruptions in it, including COVID. Unfortunately, that has caused a lot of disruption and created hospitals where you have furloughs and layoffs, things like that. So I don't know how long this traveling piece is here. I think you have a lot of generational issues, different perfusionists looking for different things in their career. So they may be wanting to travel more and do less full-time positions. So from the manpower issue, I just see quite a disruption. Don't know how long staffing and things like that will last with the traveling. But that's kind of what I see from my position.
Okay.
Great. Yeah, well, I know that you did a I know you recently did a talk at the MUSC conference about that. So we're glad we could give people a little insight on what you had done, about 2 weekends ago. So now we're going to get into Adam. We just heard about you in the OR. We know that you got blood squirted everywhere. Sometimes people go to the bathroom, they come back, they're like, what's Adam doing?
Adam killed the guy.
Yeah. You know, so now we're going to get into some personal questions that I'm excited because I think I know the answers to some of these, but we might be surprised. So question number one, do you have any personal hobbies? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, I have some that I try to golf periodically just to kind of take my mind off the stresses of work. I feel like my job is sort of a 24/7 job, but every now and then I force myself to kind of get away, and I do enjoy golf. It can be frustrating, but end of the day, I try to say it's relaxing.
He's being humble. I love it every time. Being humble.
Not every time, but I love riding my electric skateboard. I recently fixed up your brother, my son Ben's bike, and now I'm kind of riding that. Nothing serious, just kind of going out. Like to walk. I got a unicycle, still learning. I used to be able to ride one. I don't know. It's challenging. Again, in your 50s versus in your 20s or teens. But working on that. And I really just love going away, you know, with mom and family and kind of getting out of the normal routine and just taking a break and going to the mountains and things like that. So I don't know. I think that's mostly, you know, most of everything.
You seem to be pretty active. Yeah. Most of your hobbies seem to be pretty active. That's good.
That's why you're in such good shape.
Yeah. As you're getting, you know, as you're pressing into your, you know, 50s, late 50s, it's good to stay active for you.
Thanks.
We're happy for you.
It's a man. So since this is Perfusion Rockstars, and we work with you in an office, so we know, but the people don't, what is your favorite band or music genre, or what are you usually listening to?
Well, you know, and it annoys the family when Pitbull comes on. That is great. That good high energy music. But I really like all kinds of music. I mean, I listen to Taylor Swift. I know we've talked about Taylor Swift on previous interviews. Really, I just like high energy music. It can be country. It can be rock. It can be, you know, kind of progressive. When I was growing up, I mean, I was a big fan of Yes. AC/DC is great. You know, I mean, I just, I listen to classical, I listen to jazz, depending on the mood I'm in, if I'm working or working out or if I'm skateboarding, I like to listen to Devo. Besides that, that's probably about it.
Everything.
Besides everything, everything. I listen. Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, I wasn't really surprised by anything.
Yeah, I mean, you usually like in the office music. Yeah.
In the office, I hear about everything.
Something that makes you want to dance.
Yeah.
Not a good dancer, but. Yeah.
You like to party, though. So that's good. So you told me you've been thinking about this. What's the name of your biography?
Yeah, so this one thing came up, and I kind of keep saying it and keep thinking it, and it's No Regrets. And it kind of has two folds, because I can spend time regretting a lot of decisions I made in the past that may include, you know, poor academics or poor decisions I've made. But also, everything's okay today, and I am who I am today because of all the decisions I've made in my whole life. So no regrets from the past, and then also moving forward. You know, I've left a couple of really good jobs to make some risky decisions, and I'm glad I have, and maybe I'll keep doing that. I don't know. I got one life to live, so I don't want to have any regrets.
And, so, you know, Stephen.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
So don't fire me. So Steven Spielberg reads this book and he thinks, oh my goodness, I got to make a movie based on this guy's life. Who, and he says, you, Adam, you can pick who's going to play you. Who do you pick?
This is another answer I probably shouldn't say, but I've had a couple people tell me, mom, my wife, and also my sister-in-law, for some reason, they say I remind them of Phil Dunphy on Modern Family.
You so do.
I guess that's the actor that would play me, you know, which, I don't know, I'd rather have someone like more heroic or something, but.
It's not Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's not you. You know Bruce Willis.
So I don't even know who plays Phil Dunphy, but I guess Phil Dunphy would play Adam Clark.
We'll find him.
Maybe Dwayne Johnson or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, because I'm in pretty good shape, you know, for my age.
Yeah, longboarding and stuff, you stay in good shape. Yeah.
So it's now time for Todd's favorite portion of every interview, the lightning round.
I guess that's thunder. But we're getting there.
With lightning comes thunder. Without thunder ain't nothing.
All right. Well, you prepared?
I think so. Ready as ever, B.
Yeah, you can't really be prepared for this. But we're starting in 3, 2, 1, go. If you could travel back in time, where and when would you go?
1964, my birth.
Favorite junk food?
I love chips, Doritos, potato chips, French onion dip. Anyway.
Favorite city in the U.S. besides where you live?
Blowing Rock, San Diego, San Francisco.
Cool. Favorite day of the week?
Saturday.
Favorite holiday?
Probably Christmas.
Fill in the blank. Taylor Swift is
talented.
At what age do you want to retire?
That's not fair. So I'm currently 56. I would say 56, but probably 66.
Have I, Todd, ever beaten you at golf?
Yeah.
I think Adam went for the record longest lightning round.
Well,
I think he might have gotten it.
I'm sorry.
We'll have to go through the archives. There's probably a couple.
Maybe we can modify the name.
Hey, but good job. You did a good job. You answered the questions thoroughly. Now let's run back through and you can defend. So you want to go back to when you were born.
explain. I don't necessarily want to be there for the birth. But what I would like to do is go back to my entire life. It was a lot of things that I did that I have a hard time really remembering the details on. And I just want to re-remember a lot of things that I've forgotten.
Cool. Beating Todd in golf.
He knows this. So this one, I kind of knew the answer is why I picked it. Favorite junk food.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I love chips, salty snacks. I do eat candy because everyone in the family buys it. But I don't buy it myself typically. I'm more of a junk food, nachos, you know, that kind of.
You're savory.
Or salty, savory, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so favorite city in the U.S. besides where you live? You gave us a couple options.
Yeah, I mean, lately it's just been Blowing Rock, North Carolina in the mountains. You know, Dawn and I, or Mom and I, go up there and get away, and it's really enjoyable. But also, I just think of major cities in the U.S., and San Francisco is awesome, San Diego, you know, California.
Sandy.
The weather, they're beautiful cities.
Favorite day of the week? Saturday.
Yeah. Friday sometimes have a little challenge decompressing and sort of finishing the work week, even though a lot of people might like Fridays. But Saturday, I feel like, you know, the work week's somewhat over, you kind of can chill out a little bit, and the next day's Sunday, you have the next day off as well. Now, I know I'm saying there's a lot of perfusionists who are taking call often, and that's not always the case. But not on call, and Saturdays are the bomb.
Great. Mm-hmm. Favorite holiday?
I will say, to go back, you had mentioned you like Monday mornings and coming back from work after the weekend, and sometimes I feel the same way. I mean, I'm fortunate in that I don't hate Mondays like I could or have in the past. But favorite holidays, Christmas. Normally, there's a little downtime. Normally, family get-togethers, and it's just a little cooler. You know, maybe some snow. Probably low probability in the Carolinas. But just good times.
Well, great. And then this question, I'm kind of mad I had on the lightning round. We kind of already talked about it, but Taylor Swift you said talented.
I don't know. I mean, she's got a couple songs that I really like that remind me of, like, my father or things like that. So, I think she's very talented. Like Julie Walker has said, I think she writes her own songs, her own lyrics. And she's pretty talented.
Great. Now this was the loaded question. What age do you want to retire?
Are you asking that for you or for just in general? I don't know. I mean,
this is realistic. A win. This is one you want.
Yeah. I mean, want, 35 years old, but that's 20 years ago. So, maybe we'll shoot for.
For tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think of a lot of things I'd like to do when I'm retired. So I'm not worried about retirement. You know, I know some people have a hard time doing something else besides their career and their profession, but I think I'll be all right finding something else to do. But, things are good now.
Right. Well, cool.
And, maybe early, mid-60s, that'd probably be reasonable.
Discuss 8 years or something. You can give me 8 more good years.
All right.
You can retire.
Depending on health and everything else, a lot of factors.
So. That's true. So, final question. Everyone wants to know, when you gave their answer, I've beaten you at golf.
Yeah, that's important to Todd, isn't it, Sam?
It's very important.
Yeah.
Like chasing a unicorn.
So it was once in Myrtle Beach. Have you beat me twice? Okay. Yeah. All right.
I think both times you were injured or something. Maybe.
Yeah, no. Well, the good news is Todd's getting better and I'm getting about the same. So if he can.
You're getting closer to retirement.
He can continue to beat me. All right.
Well, we went through all the questions, the personal questions out of the way, the lightning round out of the way. We're going to wrap things up. But before we do, is there anything you want to leave the people or anything you want to say about you?
I mean, I'm just grateful for this opportunity for you guys to interview me. I really appreciate it. I'm thankful just for family and, you know, whether it's immediate or extended. Now we have, you know, Pop-Pop in our lives again. He's nearby. Grateful for that. I don't know. Grateful that we were able to work together. This is pretty cool. I think this is work. Yeah. But, you guys are doing a good job. Maybe Sam and Todd should do all the future for Fusion Rockstar interviews.
I think people want
bump up my pay. You know what I'm saying?
No.
We'll talk. Just keep signing the checks.
Yeah. But anyway.
We appreciate your time, Adam.
Thanks.
We really do. And yeah, keep your Fusion rocking. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.